WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Writer David Foster Wallace predicted many things about our modern world, FaceTime, Netflix, even Twitter, but he probably never predicted someone making a film about him and that comedic actor Jason Segel would play the part. Wallace fans were not crazy about the casting choice, but Segel, who is known for his roles in the sitcom How I Met Your Mother and romantic comedies that he wrote, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, is getting terrific reviews for the part. Some are calling it a U-turn for his career. This hour, On Point, Jason Segel, get serious. You can join us on air or online. How do you know Jason Segel? Which Jason Segel? Who is Jason Segel? And how do you know David Foster Wallace? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter or Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from New York is Jason Segel. He's been starring in the new film, The End of the Tour, as David Foster Wallace. We want to let you know you can find a trailer of the film at our website, onpointradio.org. Jason Segel, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm sure you've been asked this before. This claim about a U-turn in your career, which calls it makes it seem like it's 180 degrees.
Exactly.
Do you buy that?
Right back where we started. Well, I'll tell you how it is. I'll tell you what it is a return to. I think that when you're young, and you sort of have the confidence of youth and then the naivety of youth too, consequences seem a little bit more frivolous. You're making very bold choices because you've got nothing to lose. And I think that that was something that I wanted to return back to. I write this series of books called Nightmares for Kids. That basically the premise of them is that unless you face your fears, you can never accomplish your dreams. Like, the nightmares are the gatekeepers to your dreams. And it suddenly occurred to me that I can't be telling this to 10-year-olds and not take that advice myself. And I think also at 34 years old, I was just thinking about different stuff than I was in my 20s.
You have a lot of fans out there, and I can tell you because we have a little screen where people are already calling in and lining up to talk with you and ask you some questions. But I just want to do a little note to the fans who may not know you. To go back to where you first burst into the public consciousness, and maybe do a little bit of biography on you. So you started back in 1999 is the first time that you appeared. First time you appeared in a national television show, and probably and definitely series. It was Freaks and Geeks, a show that had an unfortunately short run, given what it was and its depth, and that all of which has been recognized in retrospect. It has a sort of cult status now. But let's play a little bit of a clip from that. You were playing Nick Andopoulos, and you talking here with Ken Miller, who is played by Seth Rogen, who was also breaking through at the time, about a song that the character had written for their friend Lindsay.
You're my lady. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, you know, I thought I would hate it, but you know, I kind of liked it.
Really?
No, man, that was terrible. Lady L.
Well, I couldn't use a real name.
You shouldn't use your real name. You're writing that stuff.
Well, I think as long as that I am using my real emotions, that's all that matters.
Lots of wackos use their real emotions.
So I think I've read that you wrote the song. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've always sort of written. I've written music since I was young, and I if there's a funny song and something I'm doing, I tend to write it.
And as you mentioned, you've been writing the young adult books, the Nightmare series, and you wrote the script for Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah,
and you wrote the script for the latest Muppets movie, the Disney produced version. And the reason I'm bringing all of this in. Is this whole U-turn question. It sounds like you've been kind of zigzagging. You've kind of been zigzagging all along, while the general public knew you basically as a sitcom romantic comedy kind of guy. And I'm just curious about having that sense of being a public persona labeled one way when you're something much more complex all along.
Yeah. Well, No, nobody else is you. And so they don't have a reason to be paying attention to the nuances of your career. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I don't really...
I definitely do, actually.
Yeah, I don't feel poorly about that. I think that, you know, what I've tried to do are things that interest me. And, you know, when I was young and I saw Being There, I thought to myself, which is Peter Sellers towards the end of his career, giving sort of a dramatic performance. I had only seen him before that in The Pink Panther and The Party. And I remember thinking, oh, you can do anything. It made a real impression on me because I had also seen him in The Muppet Show. He hosted one of the greatest and most bizarre episodes of The Muppet Show. And I just remember using him as the model of that you really don't need to define yourself, at least in your own mind, you know? I think people have a tendency to want to categorize things, but you don't have to do it to yourself.
So when the opportunity to play David Foster Wallace came along, did that strike you as one of these opportunities to really move in a new direction?
Well, I think that there is something about the power of making a decision. And I really don't mean that in any sort of hippy-dippy way. I think that what had happened was I had arrived at a moment where a lot was just ending for me naturally. I was on a TV show that was on for almost a decade that was coming to an end. I had been kind of churning out comedies that no longer were reflective of what I was thinking about. And I think I felt like I needed to make a change, and I just made a declaration to myself and to my representatives who helped find movies. Just said I need to do something that's more reflective of where I am. And my agent sent me this script, and I read it, and there's a line that David Foster Wallace says. He says, I have to face the reality that I'm 34 years old, alone in a room with a piece of paper. And as someone who writes their own stuff, that was exactly how I felt at the time. I was looking at this blank canvas ahead of me, thinking if I'm lucky and if I take care of myself, I have 50 years of this career left maybe. And how do I want to fill that time? And it just felt like a very daunting, confusing, existential crisis sort of moment. And then here was the script that was literally all about that very subject.
Well, take a moment and tell us and our listeners about David Foster Wallace.
Sure. Well, David Foster Wallace was an amazing writer who's now passed away. He wrote a lot of short form nonfiction stuff, articles, and you can read that stuff in books like Consider the Lobster or A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again. But his opus was a book called Infinite Jest, which is 1,000+ pages, you know, several hundred pages of endnotes, and it's a monster of a book. But what it really is about are these questions. Where do we place our value? Because we're sort of told culturally that pleasure and achievement and entertainment are going to satisfy us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are finding themselves dissatisfied. When I read the book at the time that I read it, which I think is a lot of people's experience, I felt like somebody finally had the emotional vocabulary for a feeling that I hadn't been able to express. This feeling of why isn't what I'm doing making me feel good at night? Why can't I sleep any easier? I'm doing the things that I've been told to do. If this is about achievement, what this life is supposed to be about, a decade into, well, I was 15, 16 years into being an actor with varying levels of success. Like, this ought to do it, but I didn't feel any different.
And
so anyways.
Go ahead.
So the book came out and was met with, was met with the reviews that you dream of, that this is the book of a generation and, you know, the book awards have been decided and this and that. And I think where our movie takes place, the last 4 days of that book tour where David Foster Wallace is dealing with the fact that things have gone exactly the way he wished that they would go, and he still feels the same.
Let's take a little bit of a listen to a clip from the film. And this is, again, from the end of the tour. David Foster Wallace, played by Jason Segel, describes one of the major themes in the book, Infinite Jest, and that is self-distraction.
I don't have like a diagnosis or a system of prescription as to why we am. When I say we, I mean people just like you and me, mostly white, upper middle class, obscenely well educated, doing really interesting jobs, sitting in really expensive chairs,
yeah,
watching the best, most sophisticated electronic equipment money can buy. Why do we feel so empty?
The script, which is a rather philosophical, I guess, because Wallace was, has a lot of lines like that that go pretty much directly to the point that you were just making.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's interesting is a lot of this movie is verbatim from David Lipsky, who is the reporter sent to cover David Foster Wallace, a Rolling Stone reporter. He recorded this four-day interaction. And the script is a narrative created from those recordings. I got to listen to the tapes. I have never heard somebody able to speak off the cuff in fully formed arguments with a thesis and supporting points and a conclusion perfectly articulated. If anything, it's a man who has like too much knowledge at his disposal, and the challenge is to weed out information. It's really remarkable. So the real challenge in a movie like this is to make it sound conversational, which it was, as opposed to Jesse and I saying smart things back and forth.
It was a very talky film. I mean, it had the sense of being a stage play.
Yeah, well, it's an interview, and so by nature, it's two guys going at it. But what I think is really interesting is there are also parts where they suddenly will get diverted onto pop culture, and you get to hear these guys shift from a really important subject to things that we all think about. So you really want to be on the road trip.
This is On Point. I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and Jason Segel is with us. He is presently taking on the role of David Foster Wallace in the new film, The End of the Tour. Before we talk again to Jason, here's another clip from the film, The End of the Tour. David Foster Wallace, played by Jason Segel, and David Lipsky, the Rolling Stone reporter, played by Jesse Eisenberg, are driving in a car, and they're talking about pop culture, and they're eating junk food.
If we ate like this all the time,
yeah,
what would be wrong with that?
Would be wrong, like besides your teeth falling out and getting really fat?
It's got none of the nourishment of real food, but it is real pleasurable masticating and swallowing this stuff.
Yes, it is. It's like seductive commercial entertainment.
Mm. But what saves us is that most entertainment is not very good.
Yeah, but what about good seductive commercial entertainment like Die Hard?
First Die Hard?
The first Die Hard.
Great film.
Yes. No, it's a brilliant
film.
The
best.
Absolutely.
So good.
Jason, I wish I had played that just before your last comment, because you were talking about how often the script turns to just, you know, banal-sounding discussions about popular culture, and yet they're really not banal. They're sort of central to the message.
Sure. Well, that theme, too, I mean, we've seen it extrapolated to absurdity, I think, in the world we're living in today, where you've got these links you can click on, 10 celebrities with fat spouses, and somehow you end up with 10 browser windows open, you know, and you think that it feels good, but you find it is not nourishing in any way. I mean, it's exactly the same thing.
Now you want to take a shower after that.
No, absolutely. But you're somehow – the message that's being communicated to you is that this feels good and that this is what you're supposed to be doing. And it's easy to lose sight of the fact that it's just to sell you stuff.
I mean, since your image has been to some degree, you know, it's out there. It's literally owned by other people in certain situations. You can be photoshopped and Facebooked, and you're probably out there right now in some awful configuration online. Do you just stay away from the internet so that you don't run into this stuff? How do you consume it?
Yeah, I realized a few years ago that it would just make me feel better not to look at entertainment news.
So you don't?
Because news has become a very, I don't know, it's a real gray area of a word at this point. Mm-hmm. When headlines can be printed, and as long as you put a question mark at the end of it, you can print anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like you and I, we might be dating on the internet now. Radio date, question mark.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like the smartest thing is to stay away.
So you do not read the comments and you do not click on on 10 ways that your spouse is fat.
I look at Apple computer rumors occasionally because I find technology interesting, you know, everything in its dose, but I don't really, I try not to engage. It's not really because I'm better than it. I want to feel good.
Let's bring in Ashley from Columbia, South Carolina. Ashley, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Hey, Ashley.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have been a big fan, Jason, since the Freaks and Geeks stage, which was one of the first shows, I think, when I was like 16, 17 years old, I actually could sit through with my parents. And it was
Something
out of it. And yeah, I totally cried, all of us, when it was, you know, short-lived and canceled, and, you know, been a fan ever since. So my question for you, you know, you are kind of well known for being this comedic actor, and I know you kind of touched on this, but David Foster Wallace was such a tragic kind of figure. You know, now that we know that he has, you know, taken his own life and his writings kind of mean so much more to me as an English major when I first read Infinite Jest, I mean, it blew my mind. You know, he was speaking to a generation of us, and, you know, it made me want to quit school and go and, you know, travel country and just, you know, find my own happiness, which wasn't really happening in my college classes. So my question is, how did you kind of take what we know of him now and sort of use that in your process for the movie, you know, of how you took what we know about him and being such a wonderful writer, but also a really tortured soul, and kind of put that back into this time in his life where he's being, you know, praised so much for this fantastic book.
Thanks, Ashley, for that question.
Well, I think that one of the real pitfalls of a movie like this, and I think of a memory of somebody that people hold very dear, is to sort of want to deify them. And I think also to really focus on the tragedy of the ending. And the pitfall of that is that you lose sight of the fact that David Foster Wallace was incredibly funny. And some of his writing, it's the humor that allows you to get into the deeper themes. You don't feel like someone is speaking at you with incredible gravitas. That's why he resonates. You feel like it's you with the vocabulary that you wish you had and the perspective that you wish you had. And so I think going in, it was really important, especially at this period of his life. You know, it's not a cradle-to-grave biopic. It focuses on four particular days when things are going well for David Foster Wallace. It was important to focus on the man and that he was complicated and funny and interesting and conflicted about his newfound fame and all that, but had a really interesting perspective and sense of humor on it. So I think it was really important going into the movie to make sure to portray him as the real man that he was, especially during that period of the film.
And during that period of the film, he was a decade away from taking his own life. So that wasn't even on the horizon in his life at the point of the story. And I'm curious, how do you process knowing that and keeping that out of, you know, playing some awful big foreshadowing thing?
Yeah, it's a good question because it, you know, it was something I was asking myself as I was preparing. Basically, the question is, do you foreshadow? And I don't think you do. I don't think that that would be an honest performance. I think it would just be indicating. What I thought was, if I played those 4 days as honestly as I possibly could, including everything that led up to those 4 days, then those indicators should be there naturally. But they should be there at their right level. You know, I don't know what's going to happen to me tomorrow, let alone a decade from now. And if you showed Freaks and Geeks Jason Segel, end of tour Jason Segel, I wouldn't recognize myself. And so I thought it was important to really be as authentic as I could about that moment.
Let's bring in Christopher from Boston. Christopher, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
So my question is that, you know, I've been reading Wallace for probably about 10 years, and all of his work seems to be very much interested in this idea that we're always performing ourselves and the immense pressure that comes with that. And it seems, you know, kind of linked to this idea that we're always acting. So I wondered if Mr. Segel, you know, was attracted to Wallace's work at all because of that possible link. I know for myself, I always have sort of been interested in how we're always, you know, we have this exterior self, and yet at the same time, it's very, it might be dissimilar from what we're really thinking and what we're really feeling on the inside. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's actually something I tried to put into almost every scene is somebody whose interior life is not matching up to their exterior circumstances. He's having a conversation with David Lipsky. I'm having a conversation with Jesse Eisenberg. And underneath it, something totally different is going on. There are moments in my life when, honestly, if you filmed me on CC video, it would look like I was just sitting there. And in my head, there's a war going on. I know that we've all had those moments. So there's that element. The other thing that really struck me is that when you are dealing with issues like depression or other kind of complicated mental issues, a lot of the facade, a lot of the acting is not for other people's benefit. It's for your own. You are trying to construct a feeling for yourself because you know that if you're not diligent about sort of managing your own emotions, that they can get away from you. That's something that I'm just really aware of in my own life and the lives of some people around me, that you have a choice about how you're going to try to feel during a day. David Foster Wallace talks a lot about that in This Is Water, that the real struggle isn't knowing isn't being smart. It's knowing what to think about.
Jason Segel is with us. He's taking on the role of David Foster Wallace in the new film, The End of the Tour. And you can join us as well. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We alluded to this in the beginning, that when you were cast in the role of Wallace, that there was an outcry from Wallace fans, that a guy whose profile was primarily comedy and romantic comedy wasn't up to the part. You've had spectacular reviews that are almost celebrating what people see as a pivot on that point, that you've surprised and stunned them. But it's also the case that friends of Wallace and his family and his estate were dead set against any movie being made about him, not just one starring you in the role. Were you aware throughout of their opposition to this?
I became aware of that towards the end of filming. As we said before, I try to sort of shut out any voices that were telling me that I should play this part apologetically somehow, because if you felt that on screen, I don't think it would have done justice to the material. The way I feel about it is pretty simple and straightforward. I feel a lot of empathy and love and respect for the fact that having a movie made about somebody you love in varying capacities is really uncomfortable. I think I would probably feel the same way. That being said, I think that this movie is, you know, I've done a lot of press junkets, right? For a lot of different stuff. And what I think is really interesting, one of the things I was thinking about in getting ready to play the part, is that what you're thinking about on a press junket are the themes of the thing you're promoting. Mm-hmm. And this movie takes place over the last 3 days of the Infinite Jest book tour. So it occurred to me that what is at the front of David Foster Wallace's brain during this period are the themes of Infinite Jest. He's just finished writing it after years, and he's talking about it for months. So I think as a result of that, of choosing to play that is what's at the front of his brain, the movie ends up being an extension of themes he was trying really hard to express, both in Infinite Jest, in This Is Water, a speech he gave much later. I actually feel really comfortable that we're addressing themes that were really central to his writing.
Let's bring in Anna from Miami. Anna, you're on Point. Welcome.
Hi. I was just wanting to find out, well, first off, huge fan, but I was just wanting to know from the perspective of an actor, if there's any fear in having to go so deeply into the psyche of someone that you know eventually commit suicide. Is there any sort of preparation? Do you have a support system? You know, what details this, what goes into the preparation, basically?
Anna, can I just ask you for some clarification? Do you mean what the risk would be to Jason to be?
The risk to Jason, because I love watching behind the scenes things with actors, and it seems like something that's terrifying in a sense to have to go into, especially in retrospect, somebody's mind who obviously is unwell mentally, and just what is involved then in going so deep into somebody's mind.
Sure. Well, I'll answer that question. It's a multi-pronged question. The first is, what I was really afraid of was not doing a good job. That was the primary fear that I was battling. In terms of where I had to go emotionally for the movie, you know, this 3 or 4 days that the movie takes place over, it wasn't dissimilar from where I was at that moment. David Foster Wallace was doing fairly well during this time. I think what he was dealing with was this moment where everything that you have wished for comes true, and you're confronted with the reality that it doesn't make you feel any better. This idea that you've been spending however many years, you know, let's say 15 years, trying to get there, and then finding out there's no there, and that this road just keeps going on forever, I think is something that everybody can relate to. I don't really think that it's specific to David Foster Wallace. I think it's, I think it can be compared to when you get the bike you want as a kid. And you're really excited for about 2 weeks, and then next thing you know, you're thinking about the next thing you want. It's something about the human condition. It's the same as getting the promotion you want, and the halo of it lasts a few weeks, and then you realize you have to do your job. You have this new job you have to do. I think that's really what the movie is about, and you have somebody on one side of that tunnel and another person looking through the tunnel thinking, oh, man, what it must be like to be him. And I think that's the richness of the conversation, that it's really universal.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jason, I'm assuming that there must be a little bit of a rule of thumb, an actor's rule of thumb, to what you do when you're playing an historical figure, particularly one who's well known, where you draw this line between, you know, being inspired by the real person and doing an imitation.
An impression.
Right.
Yes.
How did you figure that out?
Well, I knew that coming from comedy, that was one of the pitfalls would be that I knew that one of the things that I was up against was perception. And that the thing that I did not want to do is border on impression. And so I think what you try to do is have a lot of respect for that this is a real man who people are familiar with, and zero in on speech pattern and a physicality, mm-hmm. and, you know, amazing hair and makeup and wardrobe department to get you close because you have photographs to match. But I think what's most important is that you capture the essence of the themes. Well, you know, try to get somewhere near a person's heart and mind. And luckily for me, David Foster Wallace is a writer who laid himself bare in his work. And so I had that blueprint right in front of me. I didn't have to guess what he was thinking and feeling. He told me. He told me through metaphor, and he told me through just a really courageous point of view of, I'm just going to tell you how I feel and see if this starts a conversation.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
To This is John Donvan. I'm in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're on point. We're talking about comedy, acting, writing, and more with actor Jason Segel. He's starring in the new film, The End of the Tour, where he plays writer David Foster Wallace. But he's also a writer in his own regard. He co-authored a children's trilogy called Nightmares, that's what's an exclamation mark, with Kirsten Miller. And he has written several of the movies that he has starred in, including Forgetting Sarah Marshall and The Muppets included. How did you get interested in The Muppets, Jason?
Boy, I was a really weird kid, and I was very shy, and I didn't have a lot of friends. I've been 6'4 since I was 12. I wore a Superman cape under my clothes.
At what age did you do that?
Oh, this is up until like 31, 32.
Oh, good. Okay. Even today.
Up until about 12 or something like that. I mean, really. And so there were a lot of reasons that I didn't fit in. And then I saw The Muppets, and I remember thinking, wow, look at this collection of oddballs who all seem to be having a really good time. And then at one point I heard one of the Muppets say, a bunch of weirdos make a family. Mm-hmm. And it just really hit home with me. And I remember as I got older, well, first of all, they're also incredibly funny and never at anyone's expense, which is a really important thing. And you could sit and you could watch it with your parents and everyone was equally entertained. Nobody was placating. And I just remember thinking, like, this is what quality family entertainment is. The difference between children's entertainment and family entertainment. The Simpsons does it really great too, mm-hmm. where everybody is engaged. So after Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I wrote that, you have, and it did well, so you have this like moment of juice where people are asking you, what do you want to do next? And I said, I want to make a Muppet movie. They hadn't made one for almost a dozen years. And everyone said, you're crazy. You do R-rated comedies. And I said, no, this is what I want to do. And so then it was a labor of love to get that thing made, but they're back up on their feet now, and I think they have a show coming up. So I played a small part in that, and it makes me happy.
It sounds like you played a large part in it. It actually won an Academy Award for Best Original Song in 2011.
It did, yeah.
We have a clip
from
Muppet
Oscar.
Am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, and I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
And I am Muppet.
So where did you grow up wearing your Superman cape?
I grew up in L.A. I grew up in Los Angeles, California.
And even in L.A. you felt a little weird, huh?
Yeah, well, I was the only my father is Jewish. My mother is Christian. So they decided that they would let me decide which I wanted to be. And the way that looked was I would go to Episcopalian school during the day and then Hebrew school at night. And so I think human nature is that made me the Jewish kid at Christian school and the Christian kid at Jewish school. Didn't quite fit in anywhere. And I think I've always had that personality type that I hear a lot about where I just always felt – you know, it's what Roald Dahl books and like what Harry Potter are kind of based on,
yeah,
that you feel like someone's going to show up and say, there's been a mistake. You belong with the magic group.
So you're a Roald Dahl fan.
Oh, gigantic.
Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, those always had a kid who felt sort of disempowered, mm-hmm. who all of a sudden had someone show up and say, you've passed a test of character. You get this adventure.
So now you're writing, I guess maybe sort of Roald Dahl-inspired books for young adults, the Nightmare series. I would like to play a little sound from the book trailer for the first book in the series. This is Charlie.
It's been 3 months since we moved to my stepmom's house. It's been 3 months since the nightmares started. I decided it would be safer to stop sleeping, because I know that somehow she has everything to do with it. When will these nightmares end? Sometimes it's not just a bad dream.
What's that young boy's name?
In the book, his name is Charlie Laird.
Oh, a little bit of inspiration from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, maybe?
It's well, I had a buddy named Charlie who I named it after, and then Laird is my mom's maiden name. I always do mix them ups with a family name of mine and a kid I went to high school with.
So
I've always done it.
So why targeting young adults as your audience? Or is this a, before you were describing family fare as opposed to kid movies? Is this a book that adults can read? Adults in their
30s? Adults can certainly read it, and I think it's really entertaining for adults. What I'm really interested in is targeting kids at a certain age, this age where that the Goonies caught me, mm-hmm. and Roald Dahl books, where. You don't even know it at a certain age, but you're about to enter a track where elementary school leads to middle school, leads to junior high, leads to high school, leads to college, leads to your job, and hopefully someday you may get to retire. And you can catch a kid at a certain age and just whisper in their ear, don't forget there's magic. And I know that that has made all the difference in my life.
You still believe in the magic?
Yeah, everything I do is impossible, theoretically. Hmm. I mean, if you look at the odds of what I've been lucky enough to do, it's impossible. But it's not because of anything but that I believe that I can do it, and then I set off and do the hard work. You know, there's this misconception when you see somebody who's good at piano that they're born good at piano. The difference is that that person was willing to sit through being bad at piano mm-hmm. until they were good at it. And I've just always believed that, like, I could find buried treasure or I could find the golden ticket. I just had to do the work to make it possible.
So the fact that you felt a little bit of an odd kid out did not damage you. It did not it did not get inside you and poison you. It sounds as though it might have had the opposite effect.
I think that that is not necessarily true. Uh-huh. I think that you know, some of the same things that drive you to work so hard are the things that will destroy you. But it's learning, I think, as you get older, a balance, you know, a balance, and that everything's not going to go away if you take a vacation.
It's kind of an insecure career you have. It's going very well right now, but it must be a little scary to go on vacation.
Yeah, well, you know, after Freaks and Geeks, I spent about 3 or 4 years out of work. It's when I started writing. It's probably the most valuable thing that ever happened to me, if I really am honest about it. But I think that that stayed with me, this idea that it can just go away. Mm-hmm. But I'm learning now that I think I've done enough hard and good work that I can maybe be a little easier on myself.
We have small listeners who would like to speak with you. Nick is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Nick.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
We're good. Thanks.
Hi. I just wanted to say a quick comment. Jason, I've been a big fan. I'm 27. I grew up with your movies, Freaks and Geeks. It's
cool.
It's just been awesome watching you. And then the Muppet movie is just so cool. And then for you to take on this role, I'm really excited about it.
Thanks, man.
Really, really pumped.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, one of the things that I think has been nice is that the kind of acting I've tried to do, it's not dissimilar to the kind of writing David Foster Wallace does, but I've tried to offer a surrogate experience where I just say, I'm going to be you for the next hour and a half. And one of the things I've found that's been really nice is that people are psyched to see somebody do well. You know, we live in like this world where people really shaming people is kind of a popular thing. And just to have people be psyched, it's a real pleasure. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call, Nick. And Colin is calling in from Canton, Ohio. Colin, welcome to On Point.
Yes. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Good. I just had a quick question for Jason. I'm a huge fan of all your work, probably most your character, Marshall, in How I Met Your Mother. And I was just wondering what character you personally identify with most, because it seems like all your characters are, for the most part, so relatable.
Thanks.
With, you know, your character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall and How I Met Your Mother. and I was just wondering what character you would identify with most.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think that the things that I have liked the most are the things that are really in line with what I'm going through and thinking about at the time, the things that are the most honest. And so I think Freaks and Geeks, I felt that way. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I definitely felt that way. I Love You, Man, I really felt that way. And this movie, The End of the Tour, I really felt that way. Those were all experiences where I felt like I was kind of putting up on screen where I was at a given time. I really loved playing Marshall in How I Met Your Mother. It was an amazing 9 years. That felt like more of a character to me, and I enjoyed doing that very much. But I think the things where I dug a little deeper and challenged my capacity for honesty were what I liked best.
Let's bring in Heather from West Palm Beach, Florida. Heather, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, Jason. I'm very excited to have been calling in and catching you on the air. I love all of your stuff. Same thing, like followed you since Freaks and Geeks. Was just curious, though, do you have any plans to do any other sitcom type things, or just is it just going to be movies for a while?
You know, I think that for a while I'm going to try to explore this life. It's been it was a wonderful decade long run on television, but you know, it's interesting. Doing a TV show is very much like a 9-to-5 job, and it's one of the reasons you become an actor, I think, is specifically because you don't want to do a 9-to-5 job. So I'm gonna take some time to maybe do a movie or two a year and then explore some life stuff. I remember at some point towards the end of the run, I realized I was hearing so many people talk about things like brunch. And I had no experience with a brunch. So I'm going to maybe learn more about brunch and what to do on a Sunday.
It's amazing. Wait till you find out.
That's what I hear. Yeah, it's like amazing. This amazing mix of breakfast food and lunch.
Christy is calling in from Detroit, Michigan. Christy, you're on Point.
Hi, John.
Hi.
And hi, Jason. My question is that earlier in the interview, Jason had said that he was relating to the author that at the time, saying that that once you get to that place and you find and you work so hard and you find that you get there and then figure out that there's no there, where do you really go from there? Like, what is his next step and how does he feel?
What a great question.
It's a terrific question. And if you listen to a speech called This Is Water that he gave later at Kenyon College, you start to feel him work through these ideas. But to me, for myself, it's realizing that there needs to be here. It needs to be what's happening right now, and you need to get cool with that. And I've found that for myself, being nice to the people around me, doing a little bit of exercise, like taking care of my body, and pursuing my passion as hard as I can, that allows me to go to sleep at night feeling like it's been a day well lived. And that's been a real change for me, because I used to be, far more focused on results. And I realized that that's a way not to be satisfied. The results are never going to be quite what you want them to be, where you may achieve the desired result and then it's on to the next. You know, the question, what's next, keeps popping up.
You know, you're known as a bit of you like to improvise and ad lib.
Sure.
In the movie, it seems so tightly scripted. Did you give any license to improv in the making the film?
You know what? It really didn't feel. I felt like it would have been very arrogant to try to improvise around the dialogue of maybe the smartest guy I had ever encountered. You know, and his choice of words is so specific. He worked for the dictionary at the end of his life. I mean, this is a guy who loved language, so. I think the simplest way to put it is no. There are moments where Jesse and I, what happened at a moment was different than what was on the page. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't call it improv in the way that I improv in a Judd Apatow movie, where we think of a funny line and say it. There were occasionally things where what was scripted didn't end up naturally following from something that had just happened. But there was no attempt to like try to punch up the script, you know?
We have just a minute left, and I want to go back to your reference earlier to the magic in life. And talk about that show, Freaks and Geeks, which seemed to have some sort of magical touch, given how it was a start for so many people who are doing, you know, Linda Cardellini and Josh, Seth Rogen and yourself. What was magical about that show? What happened there?
Yeah, I think it's belief. I think that we had I think I used the expression before, but we had the naivety of youth. And we had no idea how hard it was to make something great, to get a show on the air. It just seemed like what our job was to make the thing awesome. And we were dedicated to that. And we would get together at night at my apartment and rehearse our scenes for the next day. I have not experienced that since in any capacity. And it shows, like, it's just a group of people who were young and had every reason to think that they could do it.
Well, Jason, thank you. It was a magical moment. And I want to say this to you, that as an interviewee, you are an exceedingly generous interviewee. Thank you for...
Thanks.
Thank you for the way you did this and for answering questions you've answered 1,000 times, fresh and new and real. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, man, what a great compliment. Thanks a lot.
So that's Jason Segel. He stars as David Foster Wallace in the new film, The End of the Tour. Thanks again, Jason, for joining us.
All right, I'll talk to you again.
Okay, and you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, fail fast, fail often, goes the zeitgeist, but should we have such optimism about failing? I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.